Right. We managed it. Right. So I'm sitting here with Paul Johnson, and Paul and I have agreed to have a conversation in relation to the National Curriculum and Assessment Review that's in progress at the moment, where they're asking lots of questions about what could be done to adjust the national curriculum in relation to lots of children who are struggling to access it. Children being excluded, children with all sorts of needs. So, Paul, you've got a lot of experience, and I just do you want to just introduce yourself and share some of your thoughts on this?
Where I've come from. Which I just started by saying where I've come from. I mean,
Yeah, do.
I was a primary teacher.
Yep.
I've been a primary teacher or in primary teaching for 40 years.
Right.
Scary. I was a curriculum coordinator in primary schools, and I was a deputy head. Then I was a head teacher,
Yep.
and I'm currently in ITT, the training
Okay.
primary teachers.
Right. Okay. Brilliant.
And I think what happened for me, and what is fundamental to the way the curriculum seems to have gone over the last few years, is it was highlighted for me when I was a head teacher and I was developing the curriculum in my own school.
Yep.
So that this was in the early 2000s.
Yep.
It was very much, we were very focused on children as thinkers and learners, and the whole child and the emotional child came into that as well.
Yep.
A lot of schools were doing huge amounts of work on how we develop the whole child and how we make children critical
Yeah.
thinkers
Yeah.
and how we enable them to deal with all sorts of situations and also just to recognize different ways of being intelligent, including emotional intelligence. And how they were equally valuable. And it was not just about academic intelligence,
Mm.
it was very much about all sorts of other ways that children can excel. So
Yeah.
the emotional and social was it was a huge part of the whole school.
Yeah.
And the ethos of the school was built around that very much. with the in when was it? When was it 2010-ish when Labour were voted out and the new alliance came in
Yeah.
the slant changed totally because we were just moving towards at the end of that time we were moving towards the Rose Review, which was
Yeah.
going to be a totally creative curriculum
Yeah.
with again the whole child at the centre of that
Yeah.
in and teaching being creative and thoughtful and all of that, and that was all binned basically.
Wow.
And
Wow. Okay.
what came in was the Gove, Michael Gove idea of
Okay.
education,
Right.
which is very much about learning is about memory. It's
Yeah.
about rote learning is important and memory is important. We've got to learn things. And so, really, what started to happen then is that there'd already been a focus with people with schools very worried about SATs and attainment,
Yeah.
and with Ofsted as well.
Yeah.
And obviously, that focus made many schools focus far too heavily on just English and maths, and children who weren't doing well were sort of sidelined or drilled into trying to get them. But I think with the whole Michael Gove style of education started to lose it totally because it was right, if you're going to learn for SATs, then the best way to do it is through rote, lots of practice of doing
Lots
tests,
and lots of practice, repetitive.
memorizing where and things. And the whole emotional and social side of children's learning was just sidelined totally. I know that when we were, there were lots of also during the Labour, previous Labour government, there were loads of initiatives we had in school that were designed to assist with these things. There were lots of things that were in the community as well, like Head Start and other things, community things that worked with the school. We also had we had our own, can't remember what she was called now, but not counsellor, but she came in and she just came in just for welfare. She worked across a number of schools. She was based in my school, and she had a hub, and she saw children who got emotional problems and worked with them and worked with families. all of that and all the money for that went totally. And so that, yeah, what's happened over the last 15 years is that it's schools have become, for me, factories to churn out children at a certain score, and the emotional and social side has been totally shelved. And moving into ITT, as I did, ooh, quite a long time ago now, actually.
ITT stands for?
Oh, sorry, initial teacher training.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah, so I'm doing primary teaching primary teachers. So I very much like that because I work in a school. I don't work in the university. I work for the University of Cumbria. But what I do is I'm totally and utterly working with a school, and with their trainees, their trainee teachers. But I mean, when I went into it, I saw it very much as a way for me to push what I believed about the creative curriculum and about the whole child and all of that sort of thing. And I've been able to do that for the last few years. But typically, universities running so far behind the real world as they do, it's interesting that with the new Labour government just being elected and talking about is the education the way we want it to be, the university is now just starting to properly get to grips with the Govian model of
Oh
education.
gosh, how
And so
interesting.
we're now being expected to push memory, cognitive load, and all of this thing. And so the other things are being very much sidelined.
It's interesting. It's taken a grip. I mean, I remember because I was a teacher for 4 years, and then actually the point actually I decided I just didn't see myself able to manage it was they brought in the national curriculum and they gave us a file for each subject area, and this pile of files literally stood up to waist high. It was so high, and each one sort of listed all the different things that you were supposed to get your 30 children in your class to teach, but none of them described social emotional development. I mean, and that was something I didn't really even realize till later on. It was all subject based, all subject, teach them this and this and this and this and this and this. And then what I realized sort of, and this was some time later, then I realized that the social emotional, though there was this obsession with tracking of everything, possible thing, this issue of social emotional development, there was no tracking after early years. So the fact that it was what I was seeing was lots of children, and this is when I moved into mental health practice, lots of children with significant developmental delay around their social emotional skills wasn't being picked up, even though everybody was assessing everything. And it was like so big an issue that you couldn't even see it. Such an enormous elephant. And that's what you've described there is that's what's been coming out in the interviews that I've been doing is everybody's saying, we're saying we've got to be teaching exactly the same subject now on the same day and the same method in the two different classrooms, so everybody gets exactly the same, with utter lack of understanding of development.
Absolutely.
Evidence-based practices, children's brains are developing. That's not how it works. So that's interesting to think about the delay there in the process with which. So what would have to shift? If we were to put in our recommendations as kind of experienced practitioners, what would have to shift for the national curriculum to be more helpful to teachers and young people, around this issue? What's a kind of achievable?
I think
Why would we want to make it?
unfortunately, it's sort of a return to what we had before. We need to get more focused on the whole child again, and to move away from this idea that it's all about a level in academic subjects, i.e., English and maths. That initially alien in that immediately alienates a major percentage of your children in your class. I can remember having children in my class, in my school, and what kicked me off on the whole multiple intelligence thing was a child who came to me and she was crying. She was going to year 7. She was worried about going to secondary school, and she said, "I'm rubbish at everything." And what she meant was, it wasn't that she was rubbish at anything at all, it was that she needed help with English and maths. And she had so much intelligence in other ways, including interpersonal intelligence and all sorts of things. She was a highly, highly, highly gifted child. But the more you pursue this old-fashioned academic idea that the only thing that matters is getting very high grades in English and math. And we do need to be as good at those things as we have. I'm not being a hippie and saying oh, it doesn't matter if you don't do any English and maths at all. We've got to be as good as we can be in those things because they are, rocks, bedrocks of lots of learning and things that we do in life. But that we've got to recognize these other ways. And so many children are turned off education. And probably so many geniuses are lost because of it, because they don't see that they're good at English and maths, and therefore school obviously isn't for me. Therefore, I'm a failure. Therefore, what am I going to do with my life? It's only the very unusual. I think there are geniuses like people who have great talent. And not that I agree with him politically, but Dyson or somebody like that. Who did really badly at school, but had great genius for looking at problems and thinking in different ways. And that's so what we need to do is look at more holistically at education and think about different ways to be intelligent. And that the world, what we need is we need people who are intelligent in multiple ways. You don't just, if everybody's great at English and maths, who the hell's going to be the great mechanics of the world, or great designers of the world, or the great, whatever else?
And who's, I mean, to me, that sort of process of sitting kids down and sort of thrusting information into them, the big one that I get concerned about is the skills for relationships, the actual ability to work with other
Absolutely.
people, understand myself, understand another person's point of view, problem solve, talk things through. And I see it across affecting, why children are excluded, why children are disengaging, why children are finding relationships with, partners and call their own children subsequently so difficult because they just haven't been supported to get those skills. So they're finding relationships exceptionally challenging, but there's nowhere for that to be picked up, that need to be picked up.
Absolutely not. No, it's absolutely the case. And it's that recognition. I mean, we did a lot of work on multiple intelligence by the ideas of Howard Gardner, which had been totally poo-pooed by academics and whatever, because you can't prove them. Well, I don't need to be able to academically prove them because I saw the evidence in my school. We would teach the children about interpersonal intelligence, and you would recognize the geniuses at interpersonal intelligence. You would, in all these different ways of being intelligent, and they are so crucial to
Social,
just
yeah,
the
society's life, isn't it?
And just getting children and for me, the biggest thing that society nowadays is losing because of the competitive nature and the me gratification nature of society is we're all losing empathy, or kids are losing empathy. They watch things, they watch people being killed literally on the television. They can watch it on a screen, they can see some real person being beheaded or whatever else, and they lose all empathy and for anything, and so they go out and
Think that's normal, is it?
they don't warm through each other. And I think that and everything around it in terms of emotional and social behavior is crucial. And I think that's why our schools aren't the secure, lovely places that they were for children. Well, some of them, not all of them, not saying they all were. There are some horrible schools, I'm sure, and horrible teachers. But my school, we worked on creating this place where the kids loved to come to.
Yeah. I mean, school used to be a place. I mean, my memory of school was that we would have to do some fairly formal work, and then there was opportunity to be creative in the afternoon, and that gave the teacher, this is before national curriculum came in, that gave the teacher ability to kind of read the class, let's say, and support. You knew what you wanted to bring in, but you had a lot of work around getting on with each other, thinking creatively, enjoying the experience of being in school. But you just what I've seen is that you have got no space to bring your creativity as a teacher into the classroom because you've got so many, you must do this and do this and do this, and therefore you're kind of you're looking over your shoulder backwards rather than able to respond to the children in the room, which means like stuff you're describing, the skill of empathy and tuning in just got squashed out,
Absolutely.
but it leaves everybody really emotionally drained, and therefore to me is part of what we're seeing in the mental health crisis in children and in adults, and crime statistics. It's education isn't the only thing, but it's got a big part that it's
A
playing
massive knock on. Well, if we don't get it right with the children, those children are going to go out and be the next adults, and they're just not going to have it. They're not going to have empathy. They're not going to have any interpersonal intelligence, and understanding of these things at all. So, I think it's badly lacking. And what we need is that we need to re-establish that whole child within the curriculum.
And my view is you can actually track it, and you
Yeah, of
really,
course.
you'd go back to basically the sorts of skills that you're expecting 5-year-olds to achieve. What I'm seeing is lots of, key stage two, key stage four children haven't actually mastered some of the skills that a good early years foundation stage, curriculum would make sure that you were focusing on. It's just we haven't been doing it. We haven't been asking those questions.
But the thing is, and also the thing is that if you have a curriculum, and we found this, and other schools have found this, if you've got a curriculum that's stimulating and creative and all inclusive, then when you look at your academic results, they actually get better. So those schools that do that really, really, really well, they don't have less good standards, they have better standards. Because when their children are writing stories or they're writing anything, there's a real purpose and understanding
Yeah, an
within
enjoyment of
instead
learning.
of it being a formulaic rule following thing. Writing or whatever is actually embedded in purpose and understanding. And I think it's that whole thing. I think a lot of the things about our children now and why they're so frustrated and there's exclusion and why children are opting out so much or because schools are, is because schools are not welcoming safe places for them to learn in anymore, because it's all about got to get on this treadmill, and if you don't work on the treadmill, then you don't fit. And that's where children are falling off.
I completely agree with you. But if so, let's imagine that they did say, okay, let's sort of soften, let's sort of make some adjustments. What's your experience in, how much extra training would the current teaching workforce need to be able to, shift their practices to,
But this, yeah,
develop
this
these sorts of skills?
that's a very interesting question, and it's a real conundrum, because actually I have found over the because I've only been in the teacher training business for 10 years, and I have found in that time I feel the teachers new teachers I've been teaching are being de-skilled. Because what they're doing is learning formulas, and they're learning how to use systems. They're using IT products.
How to
It's
track.
all yeah, and it's all very, very, very shallow for me. I think the learning that they're giving the children is shallow, because it's not embedded. It's all very do this, do that, and then tick that box, and there you are. It's like they used to do on, Blue Peter, but then crown at the end of it, it just totally and utterly. I think that when teachers are able to teach creatively and they're given the chance to, and they're given support to, They love the teaching more. So your teaching staff is more motivated, much more motivated. Problem with that is that if you were to take that rug away of everything they've got now, they'd be absolutely terrified, probably, for them. Like, what am I supposed to do? Where do I, what do I fill in? Or where do I download my next lesson plan from? And that shocks me when teachers, young teachers, aren't able to pull apart something and think, right, why am I doing this? And
What would engage my class with this
how can I make
session?
my children really engage with this, learn it, love it? Actually, how can I embed the learning and the success criteria and everything within it? And they don't, because what they do is they go and they switch this on. They look at its term two, week three, and they click thing, and the lesson plans come up for them.
And
And
that generation is a product, isn't it, of this system we've been describing. So
yes,
the generation of
absolutely.
teachers haven't had their creativity nurtured.
So
And
I think your older teachers will be fine, but the young ones are going to need help.
Gosh, it's a big thing, but it's a really big deal in terms of brain development, because at a very basic level, if we, my understanding of, I was sort of like, oh, we've got to do evidence-based practice. And then I was looking around thinking, well, this isn't evidence-based. If you really want a really healthy, thriving brain and lots of, healthy, thriving brains, you've got to get sparks flying. You can't get them just into rigid, routine patterns. A few of those is great, but too many of those, you're going to close the brain capacity right down. And I find it really concerning when I see it, because it feels like we're generating a group of the next generation who are going to find problem solving really difficult, and they're going to really need problem solving skills, because it's becoming a complicated world,
And I think that's a very big thing about the world, because actually, what does the world need? Does it need people who just know, you do this, you do that, you do, how to do something in a very very tight constraint? So this is dealing with this task, rather than, oh, here's a problem, how do I deal with a problem? And they can't do that because they want to be told what to do. And it's just really shocking, I think, how unable young people are to solve problems and to think
And to think.
creatively and to think around problems, because they're just not incapable. They want to be told, what is the problem? You tell me what the problem is and what I've got to do.
I'm actually having a flashback to my own primary school education, and I remember my teacher, who I loved. I thought he was absolutely, really loved going to school, but he taught us Edward de Bono thinking skills. So we had to learn how to solve a problem with all these different styles. And I still use those ideas today to think, to kind of tackle big questions like this, probably. What's happening? But I'm so grateful to have been taught to think rather than just taught to learn facts.
Definitely,
And
definitely.
perhaps makes you slightly more rebellious, but that might be the reasoning. Oh gosh, we could talk about it all day, but we said we'd keep it short. But
I think we've sort of got, I think we've sort
I
of
think we've
got it
covered
there.
some key things, haven't we? Yeah, no, that's really great. Really, thank you ever
All
so
right.
much. All right, I'll be in
No
touch.
problem.
Thank
All
you.
right.
Okay,
Take
bye
care.
then.
Bye.
Bye.